Welcome to Founder Story, the podcast where trailblazing entrepreneurs share their extraordinary journeys, uncover the passion, grit, and vision that drive the world of business and innovation. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Founder Story. Today, we have a very special guest, Nir Eyal. He's an incredible expert and author who's not only cracked the code on habit-forming products with Hooked, but also taught us how to harness our attention with Indistractable, something I need. And in this episode, we're gonna unravel the four cornerstones of creating habits. We're gonna challenge the stigma around ADHD, which a lot of us need to know and hear. And we're gonna provide actionable insights to beat procrastination. I know he's gonna touch on burnout. We're gonna talk about social media and the impact on society. But Nir, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, great to be here with you.
I know I set up a lot there. And so we're going to dive in because, Nir, I've heard you speak about a lot of different things on a lot of different topics. I love your new book. So let's dive into something that's surrounding that. And so how does somebody become indistractable? Because me, I am the worst at it.
Yeah, well, you're part of an illustrious club. I'm also a member of this club of distractible people. In fact, the book took me 5 years to write because I kept getting distracted. I wrote the book for me. I mean, look, I'm thrilled that it sold 500,000 copies and counting, that it won all kinds of awards and that it's helping so many people. But really, at the end of the day, I wrote the book Indistractable because I needed it more than anyone. And so what I did was really start from bare bones, really tried to understand what is this phenomenon of distraction. One of the things I learned was that this is not a new problem. That, you know, we tend to blame our devices, we tend to blame the internet, social media, it's our phones, it's all this stuff outside of us. It turns out that this is not a new problem, that people have been struggling with distraction for at least the past 2,500 years. Plato, the Greek philosopher, was quoted as talking about akrasia in the Greek, the tendency to do things against our better interests. So if people have been complaining about distraction for 2,500 years, the source of the problem can't be our devices. And so frankly, I just got sick of these tenured professors telling the rest of us to just stop checking social media, stop using email, as if everybody can do that. Yeah, if you're a tenured professor, you can afford not to get fired. But the rest of us, if we stop checking email and stop using social media, we're going to get fired, right? We're not going to have a career. And so what I wanted to do was to really start from bare bones, really from the basics of what is distraction? Why don't we do what we say we're going to do despite knowing it, right? The problem these days is not that we don't know what to do. We all know what to do. If you need to get in shape, you exercise, you eat right. Does anybody really need to buy another a diet book to tell you that? If you want to have a better career, you have to do the work that other people don't want to do. If you want to have a better relationship, you have to be fully present with the people you love. We know this stuff. And frankly, if you don't know the answer to something, just Google it. We have all the information at our fingertips. What we don't know how to do is how do we stop getting in our own way? How do we stop getting distracted? So that's why I really wanted to focus on the deeper psychology of why we get distracted. And what I discovered was that the reason we get distracted is much bigger and much more empowering than just saying, well, stop using your devices. It's all technology fault. And much more empowering than, in fact, we have way more power than most people think to fight distraction and make sure that we use these technologies as opposed to letting these technologies use us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that because I thought it was just me. I thought I have like some issue because there's so many things happening. And if Plato had the issue, I can only imagine with all these.
Yeah, you're human. That's the issue. You're human. And in fact, if we think about it, you're an incredibly fortunate human. Because for 200,000 years of human history, the only people who got distracted were the people who had time to not worry about their next meal, time to worry about whether their kids were going to get eaten by a tiger, right? So for the vast majority of human history, most people never had the luxury of being distracted. It's only the fact that we live in such a prosperous age where we have so many good things that we have this high-class problem of, oh, I like to use my phone a lot because it's so user-friendly. I like to watch Netflix because it's so entertaining. You know, so the solution can't be blaming it on our technologies. The price of progress, the price of living in a world with so many good things in it, is learning how to deal with these things. The good news is we have way more power than we think if we learn this new skill set of becoming indistractable.
So with the ability now that it seems like AI is going to be able to do a lot of things for us, that might give us even more time, the luxury of more time.
Yes.
So How do you see that playing out?
So it's a double-edged sword. So I think you're absolutely right. I think AI is going to enable us to have more time. That's what technological progress always does. In the history of humankind, it shortens the work to get a particular result. That's the definition of technological advancement. So we can expect to have even more leisure time. You know, the average American today watches 5 hours of television on average. And yet we all feel so hurried and so rushed as if we'd never have enough time. Well, what the heck are we doing? We're spending a lot of time wasting our lives away. And so my goal here is to not tell people necessarily what to do. You know, I don't mean to make it sound pejorative. If you want to watch TV all day or play video games or scroll social media, if that's what you want to do with your time and your attention and your life, go for it. It's not up to me or anyone else to tell you what to do. My goal is to help you live up to your full potential as you see fit. So whatever it is you want to do, what I'm trying to prevent is for people, myself included, to look back on our lives with regret and say, I shoulda, coulda, woulda. So if you know that you're capable of more, if you know that you can achieve a higher potential, but you keep getting distracted, you keep going off track, maybe you're not exercising when you say you will, like I used to not do, or maybe you're not spending quality time with your family, or maybe you're not focused at work, all of these problems are in fact solvable. It's just a skill set, like any other skill set. And I think actually it's the most important skill of the century, because with the dawn of AI, with the revolution in virtual reality and augmented reality and all the crap that's happening in reality, the world is becoming a more distracting place, right? This trend is not going to reverse. We're only going to become more seduced by potential distractions. So if we don't learn this critical skill, and if we don't teach it to our kids, there will be a real bifurcation. We are going to have people in the world who allow their time and their attention and their lives to be controlled and manipulated by others, and people who stand up and say, no, I am indistractable. I decide how I will spend my time and attention in my life because I have this skill set.
So let's talk about younger generations. Gen Z, I hear a lot of talk about burnout. I think the 4-hour work week is really becoming something that they want, where older generations, it was like, work hard, work your butt off forever, and then retire. What do you think about this whole companies changing to like a four-day work week, less hours, I don't know, maybe even a 3-day work week, and then people saying these generations are lazy? How do you feel about that?
Well, every generation has been called lazy. I mean, literally, the ancient Romans, we have their writing about how this generation of Romans is the worst and they're all lazy. And, you know, every generation has this moral panic, right? When I was a kid, the moral panic was around television. And before that, it was Dungeons and Dragons. And before that, it was rap music. And before that, it was the radio. I mean, literally every generation freaks out about the kids these days. So this is absolutely nothing new. I think when it comes to this phenomenon of burnout, the good news is that we know what...
We will return to our show shortly, but first, let's talk about today's sponsor, Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio-Optimizers. Did you know 4 out of 5 Americans don't get enough magnesium? Crucial for over 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Here are signs of magnesium deficiency: irritability, anxiety, insomnia, muscle cramps, high blood pressure, and even constipation. I know I suffer from a few of these, but many supplements don't work well because they use low quality magnesium. That's why Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio-Optimizers is recommended. Offering 7 forms of absorbable magnesium, Bio-Optimizers stands by their products with a 365-day money-back guarantee. That's insane. So make sure you visit biooptimizers.com, bioooptimizers.com/Dan Robbins. That's bioooptimizers.com/DanRobbins for a special offer. And make sure you use the code Founders, 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 and you get your 10% off. So check out bioooptimizers.com to learn more. And back to the show.
Causes burnout. This is fairly recent. Burnout is caused by the confluence of 2 conditions. It happens in jobs. It's not based on what you do. People think, a job that causes burnout is what you do. That's not true. It's not what you do. It's the environment you do it in. Namely, if you have a work condition where you have high expectations coupled with low control, okay? High expectations coupled with low control. If you have high expectations and high control, no problem. People rise to the occasion. It's when they lack agency. It's when they lack control. That's when it's psychologically destabilizing. That's when people tend to have higher rates of anxiety disorder, depression, and eventually burnout. So really, it's about setting up a climate, the workplace environment. It's not about the task you do, right? You can be a very happy mortician, and you can be a miserable, a clown or something, based on how much time, how much control and agency you have over your role.
That's amazing. So let's dive into ADHD. I've heard some ways that you feel about ADHD. And it really reminded me of a psychologist once told me to not let my diagnosis define me. And they said, you can get over it. You don't have to say you are this for the rest of your life. And I don't know if you've called this undiagnosable. I think I may have heard you say that before, but how do you feel about this whole phenomenon around, I know the United States has a significantly higher diagnosis rate of ADHD than, let's say, Europe. How do you feel about all this around ADHD?
Yeah, so Indistractable was not written specifically for people with ADHD, but many ADHD coaches and therapists use Indistractable to help people overcome this disorder. Now, I will say, I think ADHD is real, which is somewhat controversial. There are people who don't believe it's real. I'm not one of those people. I do believe it is real, but I think it is way overdiagnosed and way overmedicated. And part of why that happens is because when you walk into a clinician and you list a certain number of your ailments or symptoms, this is the word I'm looking for. If you list your symptoms, there's a 99% chance you're going to walk out of that clinician's office with a diagnosis. There's really no check and balance for you not to get a diagnosis, because these things, you know, you can't take an x-ray for ADHD. There's no blood test for ADHD. It's how you do on a battery of questions. And so if you have those symptoms, you know, you're probably going to get a diagnosis. Now, that's all fine and dandy. There's no harm there, except when we talk about the fact that schools, since about 2008, 2009, many schools have an economic incentive to diagnose children. Because, you know, in many states where teachers are compensated based on performance, on their students' performance, children who have a diagnosis are excluded from those metrics. So it's much easier to say Johnny has a problem than, you know what, we need to give Johnny more attention. And so my advice here is very simple mantra: skills before pills. Skills before pills. Before you take the medication, okay, which all medication has side effects, before you put medication into your children's bodies, for God's sakes, teach them the skills first. Now, if teaching them the skills doesn't work, okay, let's go to step two, which may include medication. But, you know, because we have such a shortage in quality practitioners, they're so hard pressed that they just diagnose and medicate, as opposed to first stopping and saying, okay, wait a minute, what are some fundamental skills that anyone can learn, ADHD or not, right? How do we identify internal triggers, the emotions that drive us towards distraction? That is, you know, the number one cause of distraction. It's not the pings, dings, and rings. It's the fact that we don't know how to deal with discomfort, boredom, loneliness, fatigue, anxiety. That is a skill, because distraction is always an emotion regulation problem. So how do we expect kids? How do we expect ourselves? I never took a course on how to manage boredom or loneliness, or indecisiveness, or stress, or anxiety. We're just expected to know. No! Whether you have ADHD or not, you need to learn this skill, because almost all distraction, 90% of distraction, begins from within. It's a response to an internal trigger. So that's step number one. Step number two, make time for traction. You have no right, none of us do, including myself, has a right to say you got distracted unless you know what it distracted you from. How can you get distracted from something if you don't know what you got distracted from? So what does that mean? It means we need to make time for traction. We need to plan our day. If you can't look at your calendar and say, what is traction? What did I want to do with my time? You can't say you got distracted, because what the hell did you get distracted from? You've got to plan your time. Step number three, hack back the external triggers. This is where we remove all the pings, dings, and rings in our environment. This takes a few minutes. Most people don't do it. And so then they complain about getting distracted. Remember what Paulo Coelho said? He said, a mistake repeated more than once is a decision. A mistake repeated more than once is a decision. So if you constantly get distracted by the same things, oh, how many times are we going to blame email and Facebook and the news and Twitter and our kids? How many times do we blame these things before we say enough? I'm going to do something about it today so I don't get distracted about it from it tomorrow. And then finally, the fourth and final step, prevent distraction with pacts, which is where we erect a firewall against distraction. And I'm telling you, ADHD or not, by following these four basic strategies, anyone can become indistractable.
So if you were in charge of, let's say, the high school system in the US or the colleges, and they came to you and said, look, we want to know one or two things that we should teach every student, what would you say is so important right now that every high school student to college student needs to know?
Yeah, I mean, this is the skill of the century. Look, you cannot absorb information that these schools are trying to pump into our kids' heads. You can't absorb knowledge and turn it into wisdom without the ability to focus. You don't have much of a life. You're just guided by what other people want from you all day long, as opposed to what really is important to you. So teaching kids how to become indistractable, and there's a whole section in the book. I think it's the most important section of the book. I have a teenage daughter, and this is the skill of the century. The kids who will turn into adults that lead us into the future, they will be indistractable people. And everybody else is just going to be led along because they're going to be beholden to whatever the media pumps out and tells them to do.
I hope that people learn about this. I hope that people read the book because it is a problem. And I can even see it just becoming worse. I know, you know, technology is not the reason, but if we're wearing glasses, I can only imagine we got these glasses on. And as I'm talking to you, my glasses are telling me all these things, showing me emails, yeah, showing me texts, maybe even telling me the weather. And I'm trying to pay attention to you. Yeah. Do you see this becoming a thing with all these VR glasses? I know you're talking that technology is not the cause and reason for everything, but how do you see this playing out with everything becoming more of like a wearable?
Well, have you ever been into a cockpit in an airplane?
Yes, a lot of buttons. I've heard that recently one of the best skills that people can have is dealing with these triggers, dealing with these things going forward in the future. Before, a few years ago, I don't even remember people using the word trigger. Now, I feel like the word trigger is used like 10 times a day. How do you feel that, or what do you feel has changed since the pandemic? And since it seemed, you know, everyone went through basically like a PTSD type moment. And I think we're still trying to process what's even happened the last 4 years. What do you think has changed since then?
Well, definitely a lot has changed since the pandemic. I mean, I think one thing that is not helpful is that we are medicalizing a lot of stuff. Right? That when I use the word trigger, I'm not using it in the sense of trigger warnings. I mean, I think I don't believe in trigger warnings. In fact, it turns out that they're actively harmful to give people trigger warnings. What I'm saying is that the onus is not on the person giving the information to say, oh, this might make you feel bad. The onus is on you, on how you interpret that information. Right. So what's the Buddhist saying? Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And so it's really about understanding the difference between an emotion. An emotion is a physiological response, right? The confluence of, feeling a pit in your stomach or feeling your heartbeat increase. But a feeling is our psychological interpretation of those physiological responses. So the same thing that makes somebody feel excited, right? A racing heart and that pit in your stomach, butterflies. The same thing that might feel someone that might one person, a high performer, might feel, oh my gosh, this is good. This is telling my body that it's preparing to perform. Someone else can interpret it as, oh, this is anxiety disorder. There's something wrong with me. I shouldn't be feeling this way. So it's really about reshaping, reimagining our triggers so that they serve us as opposed to us serving them.
That reminds me of most entrepreneurs and business owners. You know, you could say that most people that are, in my opinion, entrepreneurs, they got to be a little bit crazy, right? Giving up the comfortable life, the paycheck, you know, to basically maybe make nothing and work 10 times more. So knowing all this stuff, if somebody's like, you know what, I'm going to quit my 9-to-5 corporate job. I want to be a business owner. What would you tell them that they should expect or they should know before diving in when it relates to the things that we're talking about today?
Absolutely. And look, this is my third company now. I'm on my third career, so to speak. I sold two companies before I became a professional author and speaker. And so I will give you the best advice I could possibly give, which is don't do it for the money. If you want to become an entrepreneur, to get rich and go public and list your company, you're just bad at math. Right? Like, you're just not looking at the odds appropriately. The right reason to start a company is not to get rich. The right reason to start a company is because you can't do anything else. Because you have this burning desire, this fire in your belly, that you have an idea for a product or service that needs to exist in the world, that you want to create. Because frankly, you know, and I'm talking to the privileged here, right? I'm talking about the people who could get a job. Many people, most people on the face of the earth are still just happy to have any kind of job to pay the bills and feed their families, right? But if you're the kind of person who's college educated and you have the opportunity to even consider being an entrepreneur versus getting a job, don't do it just for the money. Because frankly, getting a job is a better way to make a living and feed your family. It's if you have a desire to see something in the world that doesn't exist, that you want to create for yourself, you believe this type of service or product needs to exist in the world, that's when you should create, that's when you should become an entrepreneur. Because if that's your true motivation, is to build something you want to see in the world, you can't fail. You can't fail. Because even if your business doesn't succeed financially, even if you don't go public, you built something that you yourself want. And this is one of the best life hacks in business, is to build something that you know at least somebody wants, right? The reason that most new business ideas fail is because they didn't find product market fit. Nobody wanted what they made, or not enough people wanted what they made. But if you build a product for yourself, you are looking to build something that you know somebody wants, somebody like you, and there's probably other people out there like you. So if you look at the profile, the people who started, you know, Zuckerberg at Facebook, if you look at the Twitter guys, if you look at the Google guys, if you look at Apple, if you look at all these world-changing products, Amazon, they were all started by founders who wanted to build something for themselves first and foremost, and then it became a business.
I love that. Solving a problem, having a mission, product market fit. These have been all incredible, Nir. So if people want to get in touch with you, they want to buy your book, they want to find out more information, how can they do so?
Sure thing. So my website is called nirandfar.com, Nir and Far, but Nir is spelled like my first name. So nirandfar.com. And my most recent book is called Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life.
Well, I hope everyone, I know you sold over 500,000 books. I hope you get to like 10 million books. So 10 million people can be less distracted, can be more focused, can get more done. I mean, create more in this world, more better things in this world that the world needs, and solve many more problems. But Nir, it's been really amazing having you here. We have a connection going back to Altamont Springs. I know we were joking about it before, which is hilarious. The fact that you've been there and lived there, and I did too, it's quite funny. But thank you so much for being here today on Founder Story. We have a mission to impact 100 million people in our lifetime. And so thank you for being here and adding to that.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Founder Story. Keep exploring, keep dreaming, and join us next time for more inspiring entrepreneurial journeys.